Now, Sandy.
The sandwiches were gone, so was the iced tea. I told Arky to get $10 out of the contingency fund, which was kept in a jar in the upstairs closet, and go down to Finn's cash and carry. I thought 2 6-packs of Coke and 1 root beer would probably carry us through to the end.
I do that, I missed the part about the fish, Arky said.
Arky, you know the part about the fish. You know all the parts of this story. Go on, get us some cold drinks. Please? He went, firing up his old truck and driving out of the parking lot too fast. Man driving that way was apt to get a ticket.
Go on, Ned said. What happened next?
Well, I said, let's see. The old Sarge became a grandfather, that was one thing. Probably happened a lot sooner than he wanted it to. Baby girl born out of wedlock. Big hoorah in the family, but everyone eventually calmed down, and that girl has gone on to Smith, which is not a bad place for a young lady to get her diploma, so I understand. George Morgan's boy hit a home run in T-ball, and George went around just about busting his buttons. He was so proud. This was, I think, 2 years before he killed the woman in the road and then killed himself. Orvie Garrett's wife got blood poisoning in her foot and lost a couple of toes. Shirley Pasternak came to work with us in 1984.
1986, she murmured.
86 it was, I said, and patted her knee. There was a bad fire in Lassburg around that same time. Kids playing with matches in the basement of an apartment house, just goofing, no supervision. When someone says to me that the Amish are crazy to live like they do, I think about that fire in Lassburg. 9 people killed, including all but one of the kids in the basement. The one who got out probably wishes he hadn't. He'd be 16 now, right around the age boys are getting good and interested in girls, and this kid probably looks like the lead actor in a Burn Ward production of Beauty and the Beast. It didn't make the national news. I have a theory that multiple fatality apartment house fires only make the news if they happen at Christmas. But it was bad enough for these parts, thank you very much, and Jackie O'Hara got some terrible burns on his hands helping out. Oh, and we had a trooper, James Dockery, his name was.
Docker T,
Phil Candleton said. T. But you're forgiven, Sarge. He wasn't here more than a month or two, and then he transferred over to Lycoming. I nodded. Anyhow, this Dockerty won a 3rd prize in the Betty Crocker bake-off for a recipe called Golden Sausage Puffs. He got ribbed like a motherfucker, but he took it well.
Very well, Eddie J. agreed. He should have stayed. He would have fit in here.
We won the tug-of-war that year at the 4th of July picnic, and I saw the look on the kid's face and smiled at him.
You think I'm teasing you, Ned, but I'm not. Honest. What I'm doing is trying to make you understand. The Buick was not the only thing happening around here, okay? Not. In fact, there were times when we forgot it entirely. Most of us, anyway. For long stretches of time, it was easy to forget. For long stretches of time, all it did was sit out back and be quiet. Cops came and went while it did.
Dockerty stayed just long enough to get nicknamed Chef Prudhomme. Young Paul Loving, the one who sprained his knee last Labor Day, got transferred out and then got transferred back in 3 years later. This job isn't the revolving door that some jobs are, but the door turns all right. There's probably been 70 troopers through here since the summer of 1979.
Oh, that's way low, Huddy said. Make it 100 counting the transfers and the troops who are on duty here currently, plus a few bad eggs.
Yeah, a few bad eggs, but most of us did our jobs. And Ned, listen. Your father and Tony Shane Dinks learned a lesson the night your father opened up that bat thing. I did, too. Sometimes there's nothing to learn, or no way to learn it, or no reason to even try. I saw a movie once where this fellow explained why he lit a candle in church, even though he wasn't a very good Catholic anymore. You don't fuck around with the infinite, he said. Maybe that was a lesson we learned.
Every now and then there was another light quake in Shed B. Sometimes just a little trembler, sometimes a great gosh almighty. But people have a really amazing capacity to get used to stuff, even stuff they don't understand. A comet shows up in the sky and half the world goes around bawling about the last days and the four horsemen. But let the comet stay there 6 months and no one even notices. It's a big ho-hum. Same thing happened at the end of the 20th century, remember? Everyone ran around screaming that the sky was falling and all the computers were going to freeze up. A week goes by and it's business as usual. What I'm doing is trying to keep things in perspective for you. To tell me about the fish, he said, and I felt that anger again. He wasn't going to hear all I had to say, no matter how much I wanted him to or how hard I tried. He'd hear the parts he wanted to hear and call it good. Think of it as the teenage disease. And the light in his eyes was like the light in his father's eyes when Kurt bent over the bat thing with his scalpel in his gloved hand. Cutting now. I sometimes still hear Curtis Wilcox saying that in my dreams. Not exactly like it, though. Because the boy wasn't just curious. He was angry as well. Pissed like a bear. My own anger rose out of his refusal to take everything I wanted to give, for having the gall to pick and choose. But where did his come from? What was its center? That his mother had been lied to, not just once, but over and over as the years passed? That he himself had been lied to, if only by omission? Was he mad at his father for holding on to a secret? Mad at us? Us? Surely he didn't believe the Buick killed his father. Why would he? Bradley Roach was safely on the hook for that. Roach had unspooled him up the side of a pulled-over 16-wheeler, leaving a blood smear 10 feet long and as tall as a state trooper, about 6'2" in the case of Curtis Wilcox, pulling his clothes not just off but inside out as well in the scream of brakes, and all the while the radio playing WPND, which billed itself Western Pennsylvania's Country Fried Radio. What else would it be but country with a half-drunk lowrider like Bradley? Mama sang bass and Papa sang tenor as the coins were ripped out of Kurt Wilcox's pants and his penis was torn off like a weed and his balls were reduced to strawberry jelly and his comb and wallet landed on the yellow line. Bradley Roach, responsible for all that. Or maybe you wanted to save some blame for Dickie's Convenience in Statler that sold him the beer. Or maybe for the beer company itself, with its good time ads about cute-talking frogs and funny ballpark beer men instead of dead people lying by the highway with their guts hanging out. Or maybe you want to blame it on Bradley's DNA. Little twists of cellular rope that had been whispering, drink more, ever since Bradley's first sip. Because some people are just wired up that way, which is to say, like suitcase bombs ready to explode. Which is absolutely zero comfort to the dead and wounded. Or maybe God was to blame. God's always a popular whipping boy because he doesn't talk back and never writes a column for the op-ed page. Not the Buick, though, right? He couldn't find the Buick in Kurt's death, no matter how he traced it out. The Buick had been sitting miles away in Shed B. Fat and luxy and blameless, on white-walled tires that wouldn't take dirt or even the slightest pebble in the treads, but repudiated them, each and every one, right down to, as far as we could tell, the finest grain of sand. It was just sitting there and minding its business when Trooper Wilcox bled out on the side of Pennsylvania State Road 32. And if it was sitting there all the while in the faintest baleful reek of cabbage, what of that? Did this boy think, Ned, it didn't reach out for him, if that's what you're thinking, I said. It doesn't do that. I had to laugh at myself a little, sounding so sure, sounding as if I knew that for a fact, or anything else for a fact when it came to the roadmaster. It has pull, maybe even a kind of voice, when it's in one of its, I don't know, active phases, Shirley suggested. Yes, when it's in one of its active phases. You can hear the hum, and sometimes you can hear it in your head as well. kind of calling. But could it reach out all the way to Highway 32 by the old Jenny station? No way. Shirley was looking at me as if I'd gone slightly loopy, and I felt slightly loopy. What exactly was I doing? Trying to talk myself out of being angry at this unlucky father-lost boy? Sandy, I just want to hear about the fish. I looked at Huddy, then Phil and Eddie. All three offered variations of the same rueful shrug. Kids, what are you going to do? Finish it. That's what I was going to do. Set aside my anger and finish it. I had spilled the beans. I hadn't known how many beans there were in the bag when I started, I'll grant you that much. And now I was going to clean them up. All right, Ned, I'll tell you what you want to hear. But will you at least bear in mind that this place stayed a barracks? Will you try to remember that? Whether you believe it or not, whether you like it or not, the Buick eventually became just another part of our day. Like writing reports, or testifying in court, or cleaning puke off the floor mats of a cruiser, or Steve DeVoe's Polish jokes. Because it's important. Sure. Tell me about the fish. I leaned back against the wall and raised my eyes to the moon. I wanted to give him his life back if I could, or stars in a paper cup. All that poetry. All he wanted to hear about was the goddamn fish. So fuck it, I told him.